Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well, where I also post more content. Visit the website, dsmsports.net, and of course, check out the podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms. Really awesome show for you guys today. This is one that I'm checking off my bucket list. I'm able to speak to an active professional athlete and also someone who's really doing some stuff in the brand world. I'm going to be able to talk to Amobi Okugo today. He is a professional soccer player currently with the Austin Bold FC in the USL. Also has spent a lot of years with MLS. And he's also the founder and owner and figurehead and primary content creator for A Frugal Athlete. It's a startup that is producing a lot of great content, blogs, videos, podcasts, all about financial literacy, working with athletes to tell their stories about their finances, learning about financial literacy to help educate other athletes, but also the general public at large, using sports as a prism to help promote financial literacy. Just really cool stuff that he's doing, but you're going to be able to hear me talk about how athletes approach social media, how he has started A Frugal Athlete, and how he's growing and developing his own brand and A Frugal Athlete brand. Just a really awesome interview. So stick around for my chat with Amobi. But first, this episode's Helpful Tool. And since this Helpful Tool looks at kind of the growth in gaming, you're starting to see, or you have seen for a while now, some publications, some media, some properties, some brands create games on social media. Obviously, gaming is a big part of not just Twitch, but also mobile games on Snapchat. Instagram Stories is more interesting, more games now. Bleacher Report, as an example, is creating their own original games. And this episode's Helpful Tool is BrandedMiniGames.com. It's kind of a do-it-your-own or create your own game tool. And they have tons of templates, including some sports-related ones. And there's places where you can stick your brand within the game or stick the brand of a sponsor. It's actually free. Freemium, obviously, as you would expect. The free version does come with their own ads within the game. But you can also upgrade it to a pro account, of course. And those start at just $119 a month. Obviously, I'm not being paid by them by any means. But my recommendation is to check out some of these templates. Play around with the free versions. And if you create something that looks good, that seems engaging, that your fans would want to engage with, that becomes a hell of an asset that you can embed in your app, that you can share via social media, you can have on your website, and a great way to kind of find a new way to engage fans while also potentially activating a partner or just putting your own game, your own brand, activating your own brand within the game. So it's a space that continues to develop. Not everyone has a developer on their team that can create games just like that. Obviously, you can kind of game the social media systems a little bit. We see with IG Stories and kind of the different ways you can interact and engage within those platforms. But this site's pretty cool. It gets you thinking a little bit, and maybe you can create something that can be sold eventually, or they can give your brand a lot of value. So check it out, BrandedMiniGames.com. Again, they are not paying me at all. I just happened to find them, stumble upon them, and they have a nice little freemium tool you can use to create your own branded games. And if you spend some time with it, you can create some pretty cool stuff. So that's this Helpful Tool, but more importantly, stick around for my chat with Amobi Okugo, professional soccer player and also founder and owner of A Frugal Athlete. Back from the episode's opening segment, and I am so psyched for today's guest. It's not every day we get to talk to an active athlete who's also doing really cool stuff on the side. I don't know how he's even having time to talk to me today, but I'm so psyched to talk to today's guest, Amobi Okugo. He is a pro soccer player as well as the founder of A Frugal Athlete. And thanks for joining us today, Amobi.
Thank you for having me. I love what you guys are doing, and I appreciate you taking the time to meet with me too, because I know you're busy as well.
Hey, so psyched to pick your brain, learn about what it's really like to be in a pro athlete's shoes, and trying to also think about how you can make something of the rest of your life while you're earning that money and being in that spotlight, and trying to both manage finances, think about personal brand, and there's so much that we're gonna be able to uncover. But before we get to the meat of our discussion, we want to hear about you. Tell us about your career path, about growing up an athlete, making the decision to go pro, and how you kind of also have picked up all the knowledge that you are used in A Frugal Athlete today. And any tips for folks that want to kind of emulate your path?
No, I appreciate that. So I guess I'll give you some context or backstory. First generation Nigerian American, born and raised in California, the oldest of four siblings. Grew up playing soccer and basketball until soccer kind of took over. I had the fortunate pleasure of getting invited to the residency program. Well, essentially it's the top 40 U-17 national team. players go to Florida, use IMG's academy facility, and go to school, play soccer, travel the world, and ultimately compete for the U-17 World Cup. So did that during my sophomore, junior year of high school. Came back to finish my senior year of high school in my hometown, Sacramento, California. After that, went to UCLA. Fortunately, had a great season. We had a good senior class, a good freshman class, and we did pretty well. And then I had the fortunate pleasure of going pro after my freshman year of college. It took a lot of convincing my parents. You know, they were big on education. That's why they came to the United States for a better life for me and my siblings. So after I did a lot of convincing, they let me go pro. Got drafted in 2010, MLS Super Draft, first round pick to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Spent 5 years there. Signed a new contract with Orlando, bounced around between Kansas City, Portland, and then now I'm currently playing in Austin for the USL franchise out in Austin. So from a soccer standpoint, that's kind of like the 2-minute synopsis. For other things, you know, I know you mentioned some other things that I'm doing. A frugal athlete, that kind of started 4 years ago. Essentially an online media platform that promotes prudent financial practices and smart career decisions amongst professional athletes. And student athletes, sorry.
Definitely psyched to hear all about a frugal athlete. Just such an important area to focus on and on. And but I guess when you were kind of making that decision to go pro, did you have even going into school at UCLA? You obviously had the background of being in these prestigious programs. Were super talented. Was sports kind of the plan A always, or did you kind of have a plan B in the background? Like, what's it like when you're making that decision of, all right, after graduation or after college, I'm going to pro sports is my next step.
Yeah, it was really crazy because, I mean, when I first started sports, my parents were just doing it to, like, you know, build friendships and, like, you know, stay active. And then at a young age, I was, you know, pretty good. So they were like, okay, maybe you can go to college for it and, like, we don't have to pay. So it wasn't until I went to residency where it was like, oh, like, okay, like, there's a possibility that pro soccer is, like, an attainable goal. And then I went to UCLA, full ride scholarship. So they were like, okay, the sacrifices that were made were worth it and justified. But, you know, things developed and blossomed from there. And it was like, oh, wow, this opportunity came to go pro after my freshman year. And it really was a shock to my parents because there wasn't, like, we didn't know, like, the pathway to go pro. We thought it was like, go to school 4 years, and then if that's a possibility, you do that, because they're really big on education. Mm-hmm. No one in my family, besides like a cousin or two, like had seriously gone seriously into sports at a professional level, and they always did it like after their senior year. So the opportunity was unique and new. So I wouldn't say it was a plan A. I would say it was probably like a plan A minus B plus when it comes to like going pro, like right after my freshman year at UCLA.
I mean, it's just super cool. I mean, I grew up, you know, I played club soccer in SoCal as well. And I think everyone kind of has that dream of wanting to be a professional athlete. And you're living the dream. So it's super
cool. What club did you play for in SoCal?
It was a relatively new club. It's still around now, but all those years later, it was called Carmel Valley Manchester.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm familiar.
We were decent. We moved up the ranks pretty quickly once I was in there as well. I guess like when people think of pro athletes, they think of, okay, you know, they're living the life. You know, that's the dream. You don't have to worry about bills ever. There's no budget at all. Like, I guess obviously, you know, every league's a little bit different. Every sport might be a little bit different. But when you sign that first contract, when you make that debut, and you were an exceptional player as well. Like, did it kind of enter your head like, okay, I'm set. I don't have to worry about, you know, my bank account or like early on, did you know that, hey, I might have to work in the off season to make extra money, or like, what was that process like? And then kind of, did you have that early epiphany of like, hey, this is not my ticket to sit on my butt the rest of my life?
Yeah, that's a great point, because you see athletes and you're like, okay, automatic millionaire, automatic, like, good for life. And fortunately, the contract I signed was very good, but it's nothing where I can be like, I can just rest on my laurels. I didn't have to work in the off season, or I didn't have to get a second job. But I know that after my career, unless like I hit the lotto or like invested like in like Uber or something, I would have still had to work after my career. So having that in the back of my head, like, okay, you're good now. This is going to be a good salary. This is going to be a good contract to give you a head start if you do it right, if you, you know, if you're smart with your money. But you're still going to have to work. You're going to still have to, like, find a way to make money. You're still going to have to, you know, be smart with your money long after your career is over. But having that kind of cushion, that head start, that peace of mind was really a blessing as well.
And I mean, that's a very mature way to look at it. But is that generally the way that a lot of, you know, young pro athletes, especially at the MLS level, did look at it? Was there any sort of education early on, or any sort of, hey, you guys are trying to contract, you know, but don't go buy a Ferrari tomorrow because it might not be the best use of your money?
Yeah, you know, it's tough because some people have to go through that growing stage of touching the hot stove to, like, really, like, learn their lesson. Like, you know, even though it's not millionaire money for the most part, you know, six figures, high six figures, low six figures, when you get that in one check from a signing bonus, or you get that within a couple months salary, you're like, okay, I think I've made it. Like, I think I could buy, you know, some of the designer stuff, or the watches, or the cars, or whatever may have you. But then you realize it's like, oh wait, there's taxes involved, there's expenses involved, I got to do this for 10 plus years if I want to, like, succeed. So understanding that really, you know, I really teaches athletes, like, especially in the soccer space, like, oh, okay, all right, let me change my spending habits. Let me start being more frugal when it comes to my money management.
Is supplemental income, or making money beyond the salary, is that kind of on your mind, or something that early on, that maybe whether it's an agent or a manager or just someone you meet, a veteran player that says, hey, you know, you should be looking at endorsement deals, even if it's a local car dealer, or, you know, or a bigger type endorsement. Like, how early on did that become something that, hey, you know, I'm making a great salary, you know, for playing in my contract, but I also have, this is my spotlight, this is my whatever, my 5, 10, 15 years where I can really, you know, make money off my, to use a common term nowadays, name, image, and likeness.
No, that's a great point. So a lot of athletes, you know, whether it's, you know, endorsements from, like, their shoe sponsor, appearance fees, different things like that, that's, like, one of the most common ways where athletes, especially soccer players, like, look to make supplemental income. Some athletes are a little bit more proactive and, like, will do training and other things to make more money on the side. And whether they do it just to have spending money, or to, like, really, like, you know, buckle down, or they want to, like, build something for the long term. Each athlete has their own pathway, but I feel like in the soccer space, you know, you got a lot of athletes thinking like that, and thinking like being forward thinkers when it comes to side hustles or supplemental income, however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And this is the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. So I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little about how that started into the picture for you. I mean, you are a decorated youth soccer player. You go to a prestigious soccer school in the Pac-12 at UCLA, and then you're a first round draft pick. And so how do you start to look at the, you know, your social media brand and the opportunities that would represent, not just today, but even in the future? You're still going to have those followers and those opportunities as you move forward. And I guess how did other players look at social media early on, whether it's an Instagram account, Twitter account, whatever it might be, and did your perception evolve as you went on and maybe learn more, or liked it more, liked it less, or made money, didn't make money, etc.?
Yeah, so you bring up a great point. I feel like one of my biggest regrets, I had a flip cam. Like, a buddy of mine gave me a flip cam because I did like a vlog with them. Mm-hmm. Like, early when we had like an Adidas tour trip, and I did like a vlog with them, two vlogs, and they loved it. And the guy gave me a flip cam, was like, yo, you're really good at this, here it is, like, as a gift. And if I would have just started doing vlogs, like, from that moment on, and, like, kept up with it, like, regardless of how I edited, or regardless of, like, what it looked like, I feel like my brand presence would be so much bigger than it is now. So understanding, like, the evolution of digital media and social media and branding, it's ever changing. And don't be afraid to, like, wait for the perfect moment to start. That's probably one of my biggest takeaways, or, like, one of my biggest lessons for your audience is start now, because as an athlete, your personal brand, that's lasts forever. you know, you can only play for so long. You know, not everyone's going to be Tom Brady. Not everyone's going to be Kobe Bryant, rest in peace. Not everyone's going to be Michael Jordan. But your personal brand, from a brand perspective, social media perspective, how you influence your fans, your audience, and your community, that lasts forever. And in order to do that, they need to, like, learn about you. They need to know about you. They need to know what you like, know what you don't like, your passions, your triggers, things like that. And you can only do that by sharing. Obviously, you can share in a strategic way where you're not, like, giving them your deepest, darkest secrets, but you're at least opening up for them to feel like they're part of your family, part of your friendship group, part of your community, if you know what I mean.
Totally. And it's a very poignant time to be looking at it like that as well right now. When you were coming up, though, at both at UCLA as well as early on in your MLS career, how was social media kind of portrayed to you guys? Was it, were you guys, did they even talk about it, you know, at the management level, or, you know, at a, whether it's rookie symposium or in the locker room, or was it more about, like, you know, don't use social? Here's the potential bad things that can happen on social media, or was yeah. it an opportunity to help grow the league, grow the brand, and, you know, help create more fans?
Yeah, that's a great point. It was more like, just don't tweet anything stupid. Don't put anything on the internet that you wouldn't, like, want to get in trouble for. You're an ambassador for the club. You're an ambassador for the community. So don't tweet anything stupid. It wasn't in the sense of, like, yo, expand your brand presence by, you know, doing this, doing that, doing this. When I first started in the league or playing professional, it was more like, that's automatically for, like, the top players or, like, the guys that are, like, good in front of a camera or just, like, fit within the brand that the team is trying to promote. Whereas now the player can do it on their own, like, regardless of what the team says, as long as you're doing it in a smart tactical way. And that's where you see the shift, where in the beginning it was like, don't embarrass us. And then now it's like, okay, how can we enhance what you're already doing?
I love that. How would you characterize the literacy? And that's that word can mean a lot of things, but, like, would you say that most athletes that you come across, are they pretty, like, savvy when it comes to social media, meaning from a strategic perspective? Do they kind of know, okay, I can do this to increase my followers, or I think about my engagement rate. I recognize when a post falls flat. I recognize when there's an opportunity for me to do something cool or jumping on a trend, or to look at what happens when TikTok comes out or Instagram Reels comes out. Or is it more like, just, you know, they kind of do their thing and don't think about it at that strategic level and may not be a quote unquote power user?
Yeah, I would say the younger generation of athletes are, like, really engaging and, like, really creative. Like, you see how they edit with TikTok and Reels and stuff like that. Whereas, my set of age group, like, they know, like, what works, what doesn't. I think one of the biggest things for athletes is understanding what platform is best for them. So, like, I might be good on Facebook versus someone that might be good on TikTok versus someone that may be good on Twitter versus someone that may be good on Instagram or LinkedIn. And understanding that, I know a lot of athletes want to be everywhere at once. But unless you have a team, that might be a little bit difficult. So, like, for me, like, originally I was really good at just writing blogs and stuff like that, or engaging on Twitter in real time. I wasn't good at video. I wasn't good at podcasts. But over time, I got better in that. So now I'm able to expand. I know with the space that you work in, a lot of people talk about niche down and then scale out. So I think athletes need to follow that model. Like, pick one media platform. You can be everywhere, but then pick one that, like, you really, like. Once you master that, then you can expand. But if you have the bandwidth to expand, like, from the jump, okay, that's good too, because there's different demographics of your followers, within each platform. So your Facebook fans may gravitate towards you in a different way versus your Instagram fans. So it's important to expand as well, if that makes sense.
Totally. I'm just sitting here, like grinning and shaking my head in agreement, because, like, I'm talking to a pro athlete, an active pro athlete who gets this stuff, who can have this kind of deep level conversation about personal brand, about social media strategy. And does this education happen at all in pro sports? Is it something that's lacking, that, hey, if you're going to be a professional athlete, you know, this is something you have to think about. You have to think about what personal brand is and what it means and how to cultivate it. And you have to think about how you can build a bigger fan base, more engaged fan base of you personally. Is there a gap there where, you know, maybe part of entering the league means you get a some more proactive education, or is it up to, you know, folks like you and agents and managers to help bring this education to emerging athletes?
No, that's a great question. From the team perspective, obviously the best teams will find ways to engage and help athletes to like expand their personal brand. But from a personal perspective, I think the team should focus on crisis management. You know how can they avoid athletes getting in trouble? From the athlete's perspective, they should be working with agents and managers that are actively figuring out ways to expand their brand. How can they work with fellow brands and companies, how they can like increase their presence? Because as you know, if you increase your presence, you increase your potential for marketing dollars. And as an agent or a manager, that's your sole job. Because at the end of the day, your performance on the field, that's going to leverage itself when it comes to negotiating contracts on the field. How can you help them off the field? So obviously the players unions and the players associations and teams will have people come in, but I think that should rely on the agent, the manager, the team within that the athlete hires to really focus on opportunities from that standpoint. And then at the end of the day, the athlete is the CEO of their own business, their own brand. So they got to be proactive in the sense of, all right, how can they engage with their audience? How can they grow their presence? And how do they know what works? Because they're the ones, for the most part, posting, engaging with the comments, engaging with the, you know, the analytics and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just like follow the advice of some agent to maximize your brand if it's not true to yourself. And you got to be the best version of yourself, and that's how you're gonna be authentic and actually be engaging. You get the stuff. You're well spoken. You're thoughtful about it. How did this come to you? Like, have you always kind of been very cognizant and kind of thinking about things from a bigger picture perspective, strategic perspective? Like, did you have an early epiphany in your career that was like, hey, there's more to this that I can't think about soccer 24/7. I got to think that there's more to think about and more to learn as a professional athlete.
Yeah. I mean, when I first went pro, my dad, he literally told me, he's like, oh, okay, now you're closer to the end of your career than the start of it. So I was always thinking long term. Yeah. Well, he caught me by off guard. I was like, wait, huh? No, that's not true. I just got drafted. He's like, yeah, exactly. You just got drafted. So now like anything that happens, it's like you're towards the end. So, understanding that and having the mindset of like long-term helped me. But when it came to like actually like social media and different things like that, it was a lot of trial and error. Like I would post and see what works. I was like, okay, that got a lot of likes. That got a lot of engagement. Like I didn't even know about engagement rate until like 3-4 years ago. And like learning like how to like small time edits, small time posts, like using Canva, different platforms to like really engage. It's all a learning process, but I feel like I've been coming all the better for it just by, you know, taking a proactive approach, like following the trends, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't, and like taking a proactive approach with my own social media.
Take me inside the locker room or a team bus ride or a plane ride. Are there, what's the conversations like when it comes to social media and players? Are you guys talking about the latest trends or, you know, hey, did you try this? Or how'd you do that? How'd you go viral with that? Or, hey, your Instagram is fire. You know, what are you doing? Like, teach me. Is that happening? Or is it really just, you know, each guy's kind of doing their own thing?
Yeah, each guy's kind of doing their own things. Unless you, like, have, like, a crazy, like, amount of followers. Or, like, if you have, like, a YouTube channel that's doing well, people will ask, like, yo, like, who edits your videos? Or, like, do you do it on your own? They'll ask, like some stuff like that. But to be honest, everyone's kind of doing their own thing in a sense. Some guys will crack jokes like, oh, okay, all you do is like post, or like all you do is do this. So it's like a little just good banter. But at the end of the day, if you're doing good work, people will ask about it. Like, all right, who edits your videos? Or like, how did you do that? Right. I know I've asked a couple players like, okay, how were you able to put like two photos within an Instagram story and like keep it in together when you make another post? So like different like tricks and tips, I think that's probably where people ask like the most questions or there's the most communication.
Oh, I love that. I'm a big believer in collaboration as well. I feel like when players engage with each other, share each other's posts, like there's so much opportunity there to really kind of partner up a little bit, just like when influencers partner up on the various platforms.
No, you're exactly right.
I do want to hear Moby, having a great conversation here with Moby Okugo, professional soccer player with MLS and USL, as well as a founder of Frugal Athlete. I want to hear about Frugal Athlete and tell me like kind of how did that come about when you have this idea that there's this need for this service. What are your first steps? What are your next steps? And I don't know how the hell you do it all while also like still playing soccer.
Nah, thank you so much. But Yeah, so Frugal Athlete essentially started out of curiosity. I saw the 30 for 30 Broke documentary, and I was immediately, like, motivated. I was like, okay, I play soccer in the States. We're not getting compensated as much as these guys. So how can I find athletes that I can role model or use as roadmaps to, like, live correctly or prudently with their money and their resources and making smart career decisions? So I did some research, and what I kept finding were athletes that either were like LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, Tom Brady. I couldn't really compare myself to them, or athletes that lost it all. And while scare tactics worked, I wanted to find other examples or other ways to, like, learn, you know, the right way. So that's how Frugal Athlete started. Originally started as like a bunch of blogs that I would write, just doing my own research, kind of like extra schoolwork. And then from there, it kind of caught some attraction. And I was, like, getting more motivated to, like, provide more content, to do, like, some due diligence and, like, figure out ways to, like, share other people's stories. So we created a newsletter, did a podcast. Now we're doing video content. Now we've been able to, like, now we do workshops, speaking engagements, some small-time consulting, as well as hopefully in the near future we'll have some courses out. So that's really what it is. You know, we want to be, like, the ecosystem for people to come in and learn about financial literacy through athlete stories and athlete examples, because we know athletes are natural trendsetters. So if athletes can talk about financial literacy in a smart, engaging way, the people that follow them will also try to follow suit.
I love hearing that origin story. I mean, I think a lot of people had their eyes open when they saw that Broke 30 for 30. I can also recall, I think it was maybe last year's Hard Knocks, where there was a like trying to explain, like, very basic financial literacy, and it became like the butt of a joke. And there's some truth in that joke, though, which probably speaks very much to the service that you're trying to provide and the knowledge you're trying to get out there. It's just super interesting to see that all sort of start to come together. In your vision for a Frugal Athlete, is it eventually going to be something that you want, like, is something that leagues should be partnering with us to help, you know, educate their athletes in financial literacy? Is it something that you work with agents, something that you want athletes to come to you because they know they need this knowledge? Or how do you kind of see, and obviously it's still, you know, you're still doing it right now and it's growing, but like what's the vision for a Frugal Athlete at the end of the day?
No, thank you. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah, so we'd love to partner with, you know, various organizations, leagues, schools, players associations. We've already connected with the MLS. We've spoken at the Rookie Symposium 2 years running, but if we can get more involved with other organizations, that would be great. Definitely want to be partnered with other platforms as well. Just using athlete stories, sports terminology to teach financial literacy. We just feel it's more engaging. Essentially, if you think of Penny Hoarder, Players Tribune, and Business Insider, we want to be like if they had a baby, but financially focused. That's kind of like our end goal.
No, that's a really interesting insight too. Of all these, I mean, player led content, player led publications are really on fire right now, and no one is really outside of you guys are attacking this area of true things that athletes need to know about. Yes, it's great that we're seeing all the stuff about mental health, about, you know, racial injustice, and, you know, and players telling their stories. But, you know, how can we make sure that players are getting educated on this very important part of things? And I'd love to hear, like, what are some of the biggest either misconceptions or things that you have to make sure that players know right away when it comes to financial literacy? Are there things that you find that are, like, the one, two, three most important things that either players don't know about or players should know about?
I think the biggest thing right now is just for athletes to understand the basics. It's like when you talk about, you know, football or basketball, it's not like you knew every playbook. You didn't know a nickel set. You didn't know a 3-4 scheme. You didn't know. You just knew, okay, you knew how to tackle properly so you didn't get injured. You knew how to run a route. You knew how to do this. So once you get the basics down, and then you can start getting complex. You know, athletes have a lot of money, and then you immediately, all right, what startup can I invest in? It's like, no, you haven't even, like, properly understand how to, like, properly budget your income to expense ratio. So, like, get that down first. Okay, and then how do you think long-term? How do you diversify? So, as an athlete, are you going to be just solely focused on, you know, going right? Like, okay, everyone talks about James Harden as being one of the better scorers. It's because he can go left, he can do mid-range, he can shoot threes. All right, apply that to your finances. Okay, you have cash, you have stocks, you have real estate. How do you diversify? And first of all, don't do it all at once. You got to get one down, okay, then you move on to the next one. Then you move on to the next one. And now you have that total package. Or if you're a GM, treat your finances like you're a GM. You're not going to get a team full of veterans because, you know, they're more susceptible to injury. You're going to have some potential draft picks. You're going to have mid, you know, mid veterans. You're going to have, you know, different things like that. Mm-hmm. So understanding all these different concepts, I think, is really important. And then obviously you want to have the right team around you. I think a lot of people, whether it's having a yes man or, you know, just people that aren't there for your best interest, I think that's one of the biggest talking points that athletes are still trying to figure out, because it's like, how do you know who to trust when you're not, when you're new to this, you know? So not being afraid to, like, hire fast, fire faster.
Love it. And I mean, I work in the space where we are often talking about, you know, athletes and social media and how to succeed there, what they should know about there. And the place I always like to start is, hey, you know, if you are a professional athlete, that means you are really good at several things. You are very disciplined. You're able to get, you know, work your ass off every day, whether that's in the gym, on the field, whatever it might be. You are, and you know how to, you know, stick to a schedule, be here at this time, be here at that time, and those. That type of discipline, that type of dedication lends itself to anything you want to do. And so why shouldn't you also want to be the best at, you know, managing your finances, or, you know, have the discipline to, here's the things that I need to know or need to do in order to succeed in this space. And hopefully that translates well to, you know, to anything they want to do. And that certainly is most important when it comes to your bank account, for sure.
No, you're right. You couldn't say it better myself.
I'd love to pick your brain too, about kind of where soccer's at in the States. I mean, you've had, you know, a long career now. You're not too old, but I don't want to date you too much, but you've been in this you've been in pro soccer now for a good amount of time, and you've been at the MLS level, kicking ass up there. You're at the USL level right now, and great to know that you guys are playing right now during this crazy pandemic, helping give us some pro soccer in the States. Like, where do you see professional soccer in the United States? MLS is, you know, obviously we're seeing the expansion happen. There are some markets that do very well, some markets maybe not quite as much. Where do you see soccer in the United States, both at the youth and the professional level? And, you know, what are they doing really well? And where do you see some opportunities to really improve here in the near term?
Yeah, I think soccer is on a hockey stick growth path. If you look at a hockey stick, you know, it's been doing the groundwork, gradually grown. Mm-hmm. I feel like this next decade, obviously, this 2020 didn't really get on the right foot, but yeah. This next decade, you see the youth talent, you know, growing both domestically and internationally. You see the potential of scheduling, you know, with international soccer being more prevalent in the domestic scene, with MLS and USL both growing, other leagues coming in out of the woodworks as well. And then you see World Cup, Olympics coming within the next within the decade as well. You only see room for growth and room for big potential. TV deals are getting more lucrative. Players' contracts are getting more lucrative. So it shows that there's more investments being made, and with more investments, more eyeballs are being exposed to the soccer community and soccer potential and soccer growth. If you look at the age demographic of supporters of soccer, you know, millennials. Millennials really take that that demographic by storm. And then when you think about it from a youth standpoint, every kid played soccer growing up. Okay, now how do we keep them engaged when, you know, that demographic of kids that play youth soccer end up quitting? How do we keep them engaged for that time period? And I think, you know, the marketing gurus and the various leagues are doing a good job of figuring out ways to keep engagement, keep activation for soccer throughout the United States as a whole. Really high.
Something I was curious about too, when I speak to folks that work in the soccer space, and I mean, I don't expect you to be an expert on this area for sure, but like when you see American fans who are soccer fans, they might be, you know, bigger fans. If you ask them who their favorite team is, they might not say it's the whatever FC Dallas. They might say it's Liverpool or it's Barcelona. Is that like, are we trying, like, should MLS, if you are MLS or USL, are you thinking about creating more soccer fans regardless of club, or is it really more important to be creating MLS fans, fans of these clubs, of these players at the domestic level?
That's a great talking point, and it's something that I've talked to with a lot of sports business soccer execs, like, because you see a lot of growth from the international teams looking to increase their market share in the United States.
Yeah.
How does that compete with MLS? And from an MLS perspective, I think it's good. I would say it's good, but also bad. And they need to figure out a way to make sure that, no, yes, there's teams in England and there's teams in Italy and there's teams in Germany and teams in Spain that are historic clubs, but create your history here in the United States, where you're from, where your community is, where you can like relate to a player that grew up here, played here, and that is now playing for the yeah. local team. Obviously, you're going to have international talent, international superstars that take the popularity away, but for the most part, if you can have it where, okay, you fan Joe Smith from Philadelphia, he loves Liverpool, but he loves Philadelphia as well. So like, there's nothing wrong with having two teams. It's not like they're competing against each other. It's not like they're taking each other's market share away. But don't just have them support Liverpool and be like, oh, no, I have a team already. I support Liverpool. It's like, no, keep them home and then also expose them to the beautiful game outside, because soccer is a global game, and that's what makes the soccer, the sport, so great.
No, I like that for sure, and especially being out here in L.A., being able to watch – LAFC and the Galaxy to a lesser degree, but the soccer's fun too. It's fast paced. It feels almost Americanish in some ways. Just a couple minutes left here in the Mobile Cougar, then we'll get to a little shareable stat. I did want to talk about you and about, you know, how you look at your personal brand on social in particular, because you have people that are following you because they're fans. They're fans of you. They've followed your career. They love watching you play. And then you have, you know, people that look at Mobile Cougar, a Frugal Athlete founder, and the person who's, you know, really rising up in this space as a consultant, as someone who's creating all this content about financial literacy in sports and all that. Like, how do you look at yourself and both thinking about like who your audience is? Is your audience more the fans, the soccer fans that have been following your career, or is your audience more the people that you want to be working with from a Frugal Athlete?
Yeah, that's good. I wish I could say there's one or the other, but I've always been a multitasker, so I'm going to say both. No, I say I like the soccer fans. I like the Frugal Athlete fans. If I can find a way to like mesh all the fans together, that's what I'm all about. You know, I'm all about community, having a melting pot of different ideas, different thoughts, different cultures, obviously different passions. For me, you know, soccer and Frugal Athlete being two main passions of mine. So I like them all together.
Yeah,
I don't discriminate.
Yeah, it's kind of cool too that you might have fans that all of a sudden are being exposed to this other side of pro sports that people don't maybe think about as much, because like we talked about earlier, they think about, hey, pro athlete, millionaire, don't have to worry about money ever. But you're helping to open up that other side of things where, hey, you know, these are athletes that they have to worry about bills, they have to worry about their bank account, they have to worry about what's gonna happen when that income stream stops in their career. And it's super interesting that you get to kind of show both sides of it, and that's cool.
No, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Last one for you, Moby, before you get to the shareable stat. This is always fun for me. I know you got a game tomorrow. I know it's definitely not normal circumstances with COVID and all that, but I'd love to kind of hear, like, what's a day in the life look like for you, on whether it's on a game day or on a training day? Just give me as much detail as you want, what it's like from sun to sundown for you.
All right, I'll just do like a practice day. So I wake up, go to practice, usually get there by 8:30, practice from 9 to 11. Then we'll do like workout, cool down, whatever, recovery, get home around 1, actually get home around 12:30, 1. Mm-hmm. From there, lunch, rest of the day will be working on a Frugal Athlete or doing some sort of other type of work. So say, for example, it would be a Monday, I'll be working on my newsletter, working on like some blogs.
Wow.
And then like have like a all hands-on team meeting. We usually have it every Monday. We're actually going to switch it to Wednesdays because of conflicts. But that would be like what a Monday would look like. A Tuesday would be similar, except Tuesday is like with podcast day. So I usually have podcast scheduled from like 3 to 5, 3 to 6. Mm. And then I do like a random podcast with my brother, like a movie and TV, pass the remote. So we'll do a podcast 7 o'clock, actually 9 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Pacific Time. And that's something I just do like outside of like my main Frugal Athlete soccer. Yeah. So it's like something like that. Or Thursdays is also a podcast day, so similar to Tuesday podcast from like 3 to 5. And then I do a soccer podcast with a buddy of mine based in Atlanta. Yeah, so we don't rest here, you know.
You are not spending time like playing Fortnite much.
Throw things on the wall, see what sticks. And I'm having fun, you know. So I like creating content. I like engaging with different communities. I just like doing stuff. So it's been a blessing, and it's been a privilege to be able to do it. And I'm gonna continue until someone doesn't follow or as people don't like what I'm doing. So,
oh no, I love it. It's been awesome to hear your story. And I mean, this time is just flowing by, man. I don't think I looked at my notes like one time, but we're gonna have some more fun with you coming up in our take on segment. But first, episode shareable stat. We'll be right back with that. What a great chat with Amobi Okugo, pro soccer player with the Austin Bold FC of the USL. In the middle of the season, being able to talk to us is really cool. And also, of course, we talked about all the great stuff he's doing with A Frugal Athlete. But stick around, because in our take-ons segment, you're going to hear a little more from Amobi, some good stories and some more fun stuff. But first, this episode's shareable stat. And I want to pull a shareable stat this week for this episode that kind of goes along with the conversation that Amobi and I had. He talked about how he sort of got that first inspiration for the need for financial literacy among athletes and really just the general public overall by watching the 30 for 30, ESPN 30 for 30 called Broke, that talks about athletes that had lost a lot of their money. And a couple of stats from that documentary I thought that are pretty shareable and are this week's shareable stats is that first, 60% of all former NBA players are broke within 5 years of retirement. 60%, 6 out of 10, within just 5 years of retirement, they're broke. That's pretty wild. And if you take that into the NFL, look overall at 78% of former NFL players have gone bankrupt at some point. 78%! That is almost 8 in 10 players that play in the NFL have gone bankrupt. That's pretty wild, and certainly speaks to the need for what Amobi is doing. And you know, and it really just will help you know, the greater society, because sports is a way to deliver that messaging and deliver that, you know, those lessons. You may not enjoy a word problem about whatever, going to the market, but when your mind's about a game or a sport that you love, you can get your attention that much more. But just certainly a continued need in this space, as you know, players obviously have a ton of opportunity. A good portion of them make a lot of money early on in their lives before they really know how to handle it. And those shareable stats certainly tell a story that hopefully those stats will only go down more and more over time as financial literacy becomes, you know, a bigger piece of what it means to be a professional athlete and really an adult in this world. And hopefully Amobi continues to do that with A Frugal Athlete and continue to help that cause. So shareable stats, again, 60% of former NBA players are broke within 5 years of retirement. And 78% of former NFL players have gone bankrupt. And that was straight from the 30 for 30 documentary, which was, you know, admittedly a handful of years ago, but certainly speaks to the need in that space. So that's a shareable stat. Talk about it. Certainly relates to this episode today. But stick around, more importantly, because you're going to hear more from Amobi Okugo. Back from this episode of Shareable Stat, and I am joined once again by Amobi Okugo. He is a professional soccer player as well as the founder of A Frugal Athlete. He probably recorded a podcast and worked on his newsletter during that short break we had. But we're back now, and are you ready for some take-ons, Amobi?
Yeah, let's get it.
All right, number one. This is one that I saw going around the other day on Twitter, so it'd be fun for me. We're both kind of the same generation. So tell me, did you have AOL Instant Messenger? And if so, what was your screen name?
Oh, yeah. AOL Instant Messenger, my screen name was Amobi Says. I took it and used it for my Twitter, Instagram. All my tags are the same as my AOL screen name.
Oh, I like it. That's, you're lucky. You didn't have an embarrassing AIM name. Like I won't even say mine out loud because I want to pretend it never existed. Those are good times though. The there's nothing quite like the AIM away message. That was like the original tweet.
Facts.
Number two, we kind of went through this a little bit in the interview, but if you were to meet an athlete just starting out in pro sports, what's kind of that most important financial literacy lesson that you want to make sure they understand more than anything?
I would say income to expenses ratio, because it doesn't matter how much money you make, and if your expenses are disproportionate to the income, you're not really walking away with a lot of money. So understanding your cash flow, what's coming in, what's going out. And that's probably the biggest
do you recommend that like, they get on an app or to like use an Excel sheet? Like, what's the actual like, the best way in practice to start tracking that? Because I mean, frankly, I probably need to.
No, it's a great question. Whatever works for you, there's many ways to the top of the mountain. But for me, I would say app because we're always on our phones. You know, a lot of people use their debit card or credit card, so it's able to keep track. So at the end, whether it's weekly, monthly, you're able to get like a kind of an updated overview or notifications. Whereas, I mean, if you're proactive, an Excel spreadsheet is good too because then you're manually putting it in and it's like you're actively like, oh, wow. Like you actively putting like how much you spent on a certain thing, that can probably like wake you up like, wow, I did not need to spend that, you know?
So yeah, that's a really good point. And I'm sure it's interesting now you being out there in Texas as well that it's got to be nice that the no state income tax has to be a little
bit. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was enticing. I'm not going to lie to you.
I love it. Number three for you, Moby. Tell me the best soccer player you've ever been on the pitch with, whether as a teammate or as an opponent. Who's someone that's like, wow, that was amazing.
Good question. I'd probably say Cristiano Ronaldo. I played against him.
Ooh.
Yeah, I played against him. That was wild.
Oh man, that is pretty. It's definitely hard to beat that one. That's amazing. That's really cool. Yeah. All right, sticking with your soccer career, I'm excited to hear this one as well. And this might be even from your pre-professional career or your pro career. Just tell me what's the most memorable game of your soccer career so far. Like, what's that one that will stick with you forever?
I'll give two real quick. So first game we played away in Seattle, my first ever professional debut. My parents got to come, and it was just really like just the culmination of all the sacrifices and reward. And a reward for all the sacrifices that they made for me and my siblings. And then obviously for me, like, you know, putting in the work to get to that moment. And then the second one would probably be like my first like big youth tournament. We got to play a team from England, Bolton, and they came in thinking they were going to win. Like they're this team from England coming into the United States, playing some Californians. And we smacked them up. I got to score a goal, really did well. And they try to like, they're like, yo, these guys are older than they are. I was like, nah, you guys just came in cocky. So that was a great experience as well.
Oh, I love that. Showing those Brits who's boss.
Yeah, something like that.
Number five, let's go back to our social media conversation now and tell me what is, whether it's your most popular ever or one of your most popular, what's the most popular social media post that you've had?
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I'll just go with most recently. I just did like a retweet. Obviously, Chadwick Boseman just passed away, unfortunately, mm-hmm. due to colon cancer. And I literally just did like retweeted his post with like a black icon, played black icons, inspired future black icons. And literally that tweet just blew up. And it's not even about the tweet, but since you asked me, that's just, you know, that's what came to mind. I think it like got over like 60,000 impressions and a lot of people are engaging in it. So, and it's something simple, you know, I didn't have to do anything viral, just like paying my respects and a lot of people gravitated towards it. So
that's really well stated. I feel like I've had this conversation in the past too, where it can be simple. It's just that people want to hear from you. They want to get your perspective on some of these really important things that happen, and certainly being able to honor the life of someone that was an icon and, you know, for just pop culture and, you know, black superheroes. Really, really cool to hear that. I'm glad that we're talking in a tough time, given that it was so recent, but certainly something that will stick with you. All right, going back to soccer now. Tough transition, but let's say if I were to ask you who is the best soccer player in the world right now, who is that? Who would you say that is? Besides yourself, so you can't name yourself.
Nah. It's Messi. Messi until he retires.
So then I'll ask you then as a follow up. Do you think we will see Leo Messi in the MLS at some point?
Nah, I don't think so. If I'm being honest, I think we'll see Cristiano before Messi.
That's definitely a good call. I could totally see him living it up with NYCFC or something like that. And Messi will probably end up at like Man City or something.
Yeah, you're right.
Number seven, your favorite social media platform and why? Which one is your favorite to be on, whether for personal branding and business or just to be able to peruse yourself?
To be honest, I think it's Twitter. I think Twitter, you still get the most for your time on. Like, the engagement is like authentic. You get the jokes if you want the jokes. You get the updates from news. But obviously, you got to like do your due diligence on the news. But Twitter, like, you literally, it's like, you find someone on Twitter, you can like mention them or try to DM them, and like you don't have to worry about waiting a long time for a response because you know they, for the most part, they'll see it unless their mentions are crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, Twitter, like you can like, it's like how they, I know Twitter Sports explains it perfectly. It's like being in a sports bar and like you have your, yeah, your chance to like share your thoughts. And like, I feel like you can do that.
No, that's a great one. I would answer the same Twitter as well for me, and it's so cool. I even, you know, as a pro athlete, like when I'm watching a big basketball game or a soccer game, and when something crazy happens, and you see other pro athletes chime in, like, hey, they're watching this with me, and this is what they're thinking about right now. It's so cool to be able to make that connection, let alone all the people you can connect with.
Exactly.
All right, and it'll be time for the food question. Always got to ask a food question because I am a fat kid at heart. So tell me, you spent time playing in Philadelphia with the Union. Tell me the best meal to get in Philly and where to get it.
Oh, dang. That's a good question. I thought you were going to go with the cheesesteak. I was just going to say, got to go to Jen's 4th and South. But the best meal, you got Budokan, you got a Mies, you got Fat Salmon, great sushi spot. But I would say, oh, that's tough. Reading Terminal Market. Yeah, I got to go Budokan. Budokan is on like 4th and Chestnut, or yeah, 4th and Chestnut. And I live right in Old City, so I was like near like all the pretty good restaurants.
And what's the go-to at Budokan? What do you get there?
Oh, you got to go with everything, to be honest. Like, you got to get the appetizers. You got to get the kimchi fried rice with the egg on top. Oh, my. Yeah, I'm about to go back to Philly when I get a chance. I'm just talking about it.
Oh, I love it. And I will say, you got the cheesesteak answer right as well. Jim's is the only place that I've ever been to in Philly. So,
Good man.
Last one for you. I think I know I grew up playing FIFA way too much, according to my parents, I'm sure. But tell me then, who is or currently or was growing up your go-to team on FIFA, and which player kind of just could not be beat?
It was crazy. I always pick, even though I'm a Chelsea and a like Real Madrid fan, I always pick Bayern Munich. So on FIFA, like just the way they're set up and like the way they play, I always picked them on FIFA, and that team was always always good for me when it came to playing against my buddies, and like, you know, when the money was on the line, and I could always count on Bayern to help me get it done.
You will not believe this. Bayern Munich was my go-to team also.
We were meant to get on this podcast. We were meant to, like, connect.
Like, my friends would always be, like, Barcelona, so they can play with Messi. But, like, I was Bayern Munich and freaking Mikhail Balak and Steinsauger. Like, it was awesome. Oh, man. That's crazy.
respect.
On Moby, you kicked ass in your Take On segment. Now, your chance to take over the podcast. And tell us your social media all-star to follow. Typically someone on Twitter, but just tell us who they are and why they're worth following.
Okay, cool. One follow I would recommend is a guy named, I haven't met him yet, connected a couple times, Jack Appleby.
Yeah, Jack Appleby.
Appleby. Yeah, he gives some good content in terms of, you know, like different analytic strategies around social media, like kind of does some case studies. I think he's a great follow. A recent follow that I had was Joe Pompolino or something.
Yeah,
Like, he does really good like sports threads, specifically around athletes and sports business. So those are two follows that I would highly recommend.
Like that. Those are great. Both people that I follow and names that are really good in the space. And we can definitely make some introductions happen there, at least with Jack for sure. And and how about you, Moby? Where can we find you as well as a frugal athlete all over web and social and digital?
Great. Thank you so much for the shout out. But at Amobi Says on Twitter, Instagram,
AIM.
Sometimes, I guess. Yeah, and AIM. LinkedIn, Amobi Okugo. Website, www.amobiokugo.com. Frugal Athlete, at A Frugal Athlete. Twitter, Instagram, www.afrugalathlete.com on website. We are also on YouTube. Just type in A Frugal Athlete, it'll show up. We don't have enough subscribers or watch hours to have like our own like A Frugal Athlete page, but if you just type in A Frugal Athlete, show up, we'll be the first one. But yeah, I'm available, email, website, DM. I tend to respond back within 48 hours. That's our promise. But yeah, thank you so much.
Love it, man. I really appreciate you spending some time today. I know you got an endlessly busy schedule with games and Frugal Athlete, and cannot tell you how much it's been great to learn from you, to pick your brain about this crazy space, and can't wait to see you as a Frugal Athlete and your career continue to blossom, continue to grow.
No, I appreciate it, and thank you so much for having me. I'm definitely going to have you return the favor, give the athletes a workshop experience on what and how they can master their social media and personal brand.
It's on, man. It's on. And we'll also catch a cheesesteak together or catch a game together as well.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Thank you so much again to Moby Okugo. Really cool to talk to. An active athlete. Obviously, he's playing with Austin Bold FC now and has had some great years also to his name in Major League Soccer. It's really cool to pick his brain and also hear about what he's doing with A Frugal Athlete, of where he's, of course, the owner and founder. Thank you so much, though, for listening to this episode. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horowitz. Hit me up on Twitter. I'd love to hear from you at NJH287. Find me on LinkedIn as well and connect with me if it makes sense, where you can also see more content that I post there. And, of course, visit the website dsmsports.net and go ahead and subscribe to the podcast on whichever of your podcast platforms is the preferred one. Until next time, this is Neil Horowitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.